When we completed our last international gathering in Assisi, I expected that there would be half a year at least before considering the next international gathering. And for those of you who were there, you may remember part of my closing remarks were there was an uncertain time ahead, and we really needed to know how to be centered to meet what might come up. Now, that was in the spring. We had the shock of the elections in November, and we have been on a kind of roller coaster ride since then, not just us, but also Europe. So after we had the Assisi meeting, much to my very great surprise, it was extremely clear to me that the next one should be in Oaxaca, Mexico. Part of that because we've never had an international gathering in a developing country. We've always had them in either Canada, the United States, or a very beautiful and developed country in Europe. And it felt like it was really important to be able to be in a developing country and to encounter the sacredness, particularly of Mexico. Where we're going, Oaxaca, is one of, if not the most sacred places in all of Mexico. Pardon me, it is a place of pilgrimage to four different expressions of Mary, and also holy land to the indigenous people there. But I want to talk about the program because the people who came to me to invite to the program to be presenters really go with a theme that seems paramount to me at the present moment. The most important practice I feel right now in the world is reconciliation. The polarization is getting more and more extreme. My oldest son graduated from Evergreen. They had to postpone the date of their graduation because of the demonstrations from the ultra-right at Evergreen. So we're becoming more and more polarized in this process. And we need reconciliation in so many different places. So we have someone who's one of the world experts on reconciliation, Michelle LeBaron. She teaches that and she facilitates that throughout the world. And there's an amazing endorsement by President Carter on her book in reconciliation. So this is an incredible opportunity, reconciliation in terms of countries, reconciliation around groups of people, and we can take those same principles into our relationships in family and in our relationships with different parts of ourself. Now, Michelle is a lawyer, but she's unlike any lawyer I've ever met in terms of being a really dynamic, playful, funny, a woman whose real call underneath being a lawyer has been also to dance. So she's got all these pieces, and when she presents, she's vividly alive. So what I meant by that is she's not the persona that people have around being a lawyer. She's enormously vividly alive and has a very deep spiritual path. The second person I'd like to mention, her name is Nanda, and she just won an award for her work in the environment in Europe. She represents a major company in Europe that is committed to be totally environmentally not polluting in any way, and really working with deep ecological standards and also principles of the workplace and the product. To me, she's an example of feminine leadership in our time. She holds a very powerful position in her organization, and she really leads from the feminine. It's quite wonderful to see what that represents. And she has been for a number of years on a council in Switzerland with many different government officials and officials from different businesses, and also people representing the third world rights of workers in the third world, creating products for the West. And they have been working very hard to assure human rights and appropriate salaries and conditions for people to work under. which is extremely important if you've been aware of some of the factories that have burnt down, some of the deaths that have been involved, for our products. So I really see her as doing extremely important work at our time. And the third presenters that I'd like to speak about really for me are saints in our time. They would never claim that title, but for me they are. And some of you are familiar with Torkin. She created Bead for Life. Her dedication is incredible, and it's equally matched by her joy. She has seen enormous suffering, and she faces it with astounding joy. So she'll be speaking, and now Bead for Life has what she calls 32, last time I saw her, probably more now, granddaughters, organizations that have now been modeled in different parts of the world in third world countries based upon the model of Bead for Life. And also speaking is her husband, Charles. She is a great storyteller, by the way. She's a marvelous storyteller. It's part of the way she has conveyed Bead for Life so effectively. And her husband, Charles, is also going to speak. He brought the first AIDS medicine to Africa. He was there right in the beginning of the Ebola practice, offering his services. I've known also when he was in Myanmar bringing AIDS education for doctors, and it wasn't allowed. He had to go in a kind of circuitous way to be able to do that. He is a beautiful human being and a marvelous photographer. So their presentations individually and together, I mean, this is years and decades work. And what I love about them is they have faced enormous suffering and deprivation, and there is incredible joy in them. So one of the things that Frances Vaughan spoke about when I asked her, what are core teachings from your perspective? And she said, in the midst of compassion for suffering, to also be able to sustain your joy. And I feel that they really deeply model it. They're just beautiful people. And very down to earth, nothing pompous about them or heavy in terms of a kind of artificial spirituality. Very real and very alive. We have a man some of you may have seen at one of the international gatherings in Mexico. And I asked him to speak. He's a psychologist from Ann Arbor, Michigan. And his name is Cesar, and he comes from a Mexican-American background. And I've asked him to speak about what's it like to be a bridge person, deeply rooted in the Mexican culture, and also growing up in America and working in America. That is something we need enormously. And in a way, all the presenters are bridge people. They're continually bridging different cultures and making ways for those cultures to understand each other. I asked him when Donald Trump was saying such awful things about Mexican people, because what he said is the total opposite of what I have known. And Cesar, after the invitation came to him, was quite surprised, because he realized he had never been asked to share about that before. What's it like to be a Mexican-American? How do you hold that? And something very beautiful, one of our members in Ann Arbor said to him, well, why don't you bring your son and let your son hear about what your experience is? So he wrote and asked if it would be okay, and he is going to bring his son, which is a really beautiful moment in their life, and they'll make the journey, the two of them, together. There's also another wonderful man, a very deep friend of mine, whose name is Tariq. And Tariq grew up in Canada. He was the only Muslim in his high school. His parents moved from Egypt, deeply devout in Islam. And they were university professors. And there was graffiti put on his garage door that really was an anti-Muslim statement growing up. And his parents couldn't read the graffiti, so they just left it there. And in a way, it was a kind of protection for them, but he, of course, was deeply aware of it. And what he does, he did it for a small group, a breakout group, in our last international gathering. He does an enactment that has five or six scenes of a young Muslim today in high school coming back in the afternoon and speaking to God, speaking to Allah about his experience of being a Muslim American, a Muslim Canadian rather, in high school today. It is incredibly powerful, enormously needed. And in fact, one of the people who was there has invited him twice to perform it in the Netherlands before teachers in the school system and had an incredible response. He is now making a movie. He's a successful businessman and also started a health center in Zurich where he lives. But now he's making a movie that is, the plan is to bring four or five Trump supporters to Egypt to stay with Muslim families of a different... In the Muslim families have different orientations, so they've interviewed a whole group of people, and that's in the process of supposed to take place in June or July. But an amazing project to undertake. Amazing. And he actually has found some very interesting people who voted for Trump, you know, and who are facing certain fears to go to Egypt, you could imagine. So we have then two very beautiful women who went to university together. That's how they met, the beginning of their university years. And they are best friends to this day. They're in their early 60s. They're both therapists. And coming back from the Bhutan pilgrimage, they were both on, very dynamic, marvelous woman, discovered within a week she had a very aggressive form of cancer. So the whole world turned upside down for her, and her friend escorted her through the whole process, was truly there. At the end of all of her chemo and various kinds of treatment, etc., the doctors and nurses said to her, "You face this different than anyone we've worked with. Would you be willing to work with us and help us understand how you did that and work with people facing the same kind of treatment you are?" She had no idea how impressed. She was just doing her piece supported by her friend. What an impression it made. So she has said yes to that. And she will speak about her journey with cancer, and her friend will speak about what's it like to be the best friend who's there with a person through the process. When I spoke to them about would they come and speak and share that journey in Oaxaca, they both broke out laughing, because when they finished college, they thought they should do something before they began their professional careers. And they took a trip to Mexico, and Oaxaca was one of the major places, and they haven't been back since. So it was deeply touching for them. And then we have two other figures who represent the arts in an exquisite way. One is a woman named Margie Gillis, who has received the highest honor, like the Kennedy Awards in Canada, for the arts. And she is a world-renowned choreographer and dancer. She's created over 250 solo pieces of work, danced with the major dancers of the world. But she is an astoundingly beautiful human being, who has no diva pieces about her in the sense of that narcissistic orientation, which is quite incredible because she became famous at a very young age. She's a beautiful human being. Enormous joy, laughter, play, curiosity. And the other is a good friend, Davy Mathau, who conducts workshops and also choirs based upon the music of Hildegard of Van Bingham, which you, some of you may know. She's phenomenal. And when we were in Assisi, she led us before every morning and afternoon session and then in her workshop on the troubadour music of St. Francis and his time and the music he would have sang. Astoundingly beautiful. People were blown away. And this time I've asked her since we're going to the pilgrimage place of Mary so strongly, that she will do sacred music of Mary. And you may not know that Mary is the holiest woman in Islam. So there are 1 billion Muslims for whom Mary is the feminine figure. And then there's a little over 1 billion Christians. So there are over 2 billion people in the world who look to Mary as a model, or their traditions at least do. So she will draw on music celebrating the different aspects of the archetypes of Mary, drawing from various traditions and places of the world. And we have a wonderful woman who leads yoga in the morning. Her name is Aileen, and she comes also from the Ann Arbor community. So for me, it's an enormously rich presentation on themes that we are faced with right before us in the world today. And I'm also encouraging people, if you know friends in related fields and they have not done the spiritual guidance program, please invite them. And then when you go to register, they'll ask what spiritual guidance group you were in, but the person should just say that they were invited by me. Because I think what's needed so much now is connection, connection, connection. And I didn't even think about it. My friend Kuan Yin made me aware of it, that many people are afraid of going to Mexico because of all the media coverage. It never occurred to me, because I have never felt any sense of fear and I never saw any crime in all my time in Mexico. Puerto Vallarta is the safest place in Mexico, and Oaxaca is equally safe. So I just want to reassure people, at least from my experience, from Kuan Yin's experience, you know, it's safer, as she said, it's safer than Spokane. You know, and Spokane's a pretty quiet place. So I just want to offer that. And of course, one of the great gifts is to feel the sense of the international community.